Welcome to Rev Kev's podcast. I'm Rev Kev, and I'm just honored to be with the police chief from my hometown, Middletown, Ohio, being able to spend a few moments with him to have a conversation. I don't want to look at this as an interview. It's just an opportunity for him to share his heart, for us to be able to connect and talk about what's going on in our nation today and come from it from a Christ-centered perspective. We know right now tensions are high, and for several reasons. There's people that are on different sides of the fence on all the issues at play when it comes to police brutality, racial injustice, just the overall perception of police and just the racial tensions in this nation. But what we are commanded to do at the end of the day is figure out how to take that and how to courageously be able to work with one another for a better America, a better nation, a better world. So I feel like there's no better time to be able to just bring in someone who is basically what I consider one of the watchmen in the city. And so I'm privileged to be with Police Chief David Burke.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And so, Chief, I know your time is valuable, so I just want to get right to it. The first thing, defunding the police. Obviously we moved from the fact that people are angry.
Yes.
People are hurting, people are frustrated. You have individuals, particularly from the black community, who feel that policing hasn't been fair and just. And unfortunately, a few bad apples are starting to, perception-wise, spoil the bunch, which makes your job even harder. And now you have those who are trying to align themselves to support the efforts of policing, saying defunding may not be the best option. And so for me, I fall in the middle because I do believe that police departments who are using policies and procedures that are outdated, that are not effective, I think you need to take a look at that and try to figure out how to reimagine policing according to the communities that they serve. At the same time, I don't think eradicating police is in our best interest. So obviously, do you think?
I think, you know, I understand the outrage. You know, what happened in Minneapolis is unexcusable, first of all. And nobody in law enforcement condones that. They really don't. But defunding the police, our job has evolved over the years so much. I mean, Sir Robert Peel had his, 12 rules of policing, and he kind of professionalized policing. And we follow those rules to this day, and with different programs such as accreditation, where you get standardized national policies and procedures, but defunding them, when we started police work, it was, you have someone that breaks the law. Now we do so many different things. You know, we're marriage counselors on DV, domestic violence. You know, we're mental health experts. You know, we have to go to mental health issues. We have drug and alcohol issues that we deal with. We get calls that my 9-year-old won't go to school. What does that have to do? But we have to handle that because we go to everything. So I think police work's evolved so much over the years,
right,
that defunding them is actually going to hurt worse than more reform and policy and training. When I started, we had 93 officers in Middletown. We're down to 68 officers right now. So we are already very low compared to national average, which is 2.4 officers per 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hamilton has 40 some more officers than we do. Springfield has 62 more officers than we do, with 9,000 more people. So we're already below the national average, and to defund more would be less officers on the street, which, people that can afford private security and stuff can do that. Where is it really going to impact? It's going to impact in the inner city. It's going to impact in the areas that we're needed the most.
So help us understand even more, because obviously you can only speak to Middletown, but we're having a broader conversation for viewers and hopefully maybe even more law enforcement officials that may watch or listen to this. On a daily basis, you said Middletown has already been defunded in a sense. Which has impacted staffing. Could you speak to a daily account of what does that mean? How many officers could be serving
so
the city of Middletown or similar
populations.
Yeah,
so right now the national average is 2.4 officers per 1,000. Well, we have 49,000 people. We should have 113 officers. We have 68 officers. So on a daily patrol, I'll have 6 officers working day shift. I'll have a minimum of 7 on 3-11s and 6 on midnights. So we're handling 6 officers for 49,000 people. You know, that's a lot. And then you figure if there's a domestic violence or if there's a, you know, shots fired call, if there's someone, you know, fleeing, you know, all those are 2-3 man calls sometimes. So it really takes a lot of our officers. And then obviously if we have a situation, there's an accident and someone has to go to the hospital, we have to send an officer to follow up at the hospital. We may have jail transports to Butler County. So it's really, really restricting our ability to do discretionary patrol. So that's why I think all the police departments are looking for alternatives such as community-oriented policing, trying to find different ways, such as school resource officers have a huge impact with the school system and the kids. I did a session with some of the Middletown High School kids, the current students and ones that just graduated, and it was great to see their insight. And they said, Officer Agee's great, or Officer Alfrey's great. Well, know why they're great? They see them in uniform every day. They build a rapport with them every day. And having that open dialogue and that communication is key for any community to make change.
So I want to move to this thought. Isaiah 1:17, it says, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. To me, the theme serve and protect is present in this passage. Obviously, this phrase or tagline, Chief, becomes burdensome, just like what I mentioned at the beginning, to most in the Black community because of the chain of events that appear to violate this principle. And it certainly, not just the recent events that affected a George Floyd or a Breonna Taylor or an Ahmaud Arbery, even though that necessarily wasn't law enforcement, but it was a former law enforcement officer that was involved. And then the list goes on, Sandra Bland and so forth. It has created a callous when it comes to understanding serving and protecting. This makes your job harder, law enforcement. So especially for those who are trying to serve fairly, who are trying to distance themselves from what I call the so-called bad bunches, the bad apples in the bunch. How are you working daily to apply this passage to your vision as police chief?
Well, a couple things. Let me cancel this real quick. Our mission statement, our beginning mission statement as the Middletown Police is to serve and protect the public with honor, integrity, and professionalism. And that's the key. So when officers hire people, we have a written test, and then after that we have a physical fitness, and then we do a panel interview and a background check. You know, we do a panel interview, and that's consisted of, you know, detectives, sergeants, a major, and then after that we go ahead and do a background check, and then after background we do a polygraph. So we're trying to find the best possible candidates that we can, that is may not to be the best candidate, but the candidate that fits what we want here. And that's the key, is we have different systems in place, such as an early warning system, that every 3 months, my supervisors, my sergeants may say, hey, this officer has so many citizen complaints on him, what's going on? He has so many use of forces, what's going on? He's calling off sick all the time. That sergeant calls that officer in and says, hey, is everything all right? Because bottom line, officers are people. We have families,
yes.
We have kids, we have mortgages, we fight with our wife like everybody else. And people don't understand that sometimes those officers bring those issues here, and it's our job to make sure there's nothing that's going on outside of their normal day that's affecting their job. And we start with the early warning system, we do extensive backgrounds. And then they also take, when they get hired in, they take an oath of office. And on top of that, we make them take an ethical oath of office, too, by the state. and you're going to serve and protect without prejudice. And if we see any, that's just inexcusable. And we've had some candidates we've dismissed because we do ride-alongs, and they've made some comments that were racial. And they were in the process, and the FTO, the field training officers, came to the sergeant. They sent them home immediately packing, and they're crossed off the list. So I think we do an outstanding job, and I think we just have to do better overall in recruiting and training and finding the right candidates. And, you know, I really feel that the community needs to come out and ride with us, too, to see what we deal with on a regular basis. And see, it wouldn't be a 3-11 officer. It wouldn't be it'd be a normal day in a summertime to take 25 to 30 calls a day. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with anywhere from disturbances to domestic violence to shot fired calls to thefts to, and you're trying to solve everybody's problems. And you know, I really think defunding would cause problems down the road. And I really think by focusing on the positive and building a relation with the community, I think we can only grow. I think COP is a big part of that too. I'm also looking at accreditation. Mm-hmm. Their governor, DeWine, said there's 400 cities that aren't accredited. We're one of those 400. We have started the process of that. We were accredited from 2003 to 2014, and I think we need to get back there. They set a national standard of 181 national policies and procedures. We have those from 2014, but we need to get back to accreditation. They bring in off-site people. They interview and assessors. They interview officers here, supervisors, but they also go out in the community. They talk to the community and say, hey, how's your police service? What can they do better? And I think that's crucial. Mm-hmm. And building that relationship and getting the police department and the community all on the same page.
See, the Bible speaks about the fact that in order, in all thy getting, get understanding. And everybody wants to be understood, but not everybody is willing to understand. Please help me and the viewers and listeners understand the mind of an officer. When encountering high pressure moments like what we have seen and heard, it is easy to argue whether or not an officer acted in the proper way, based on what they see, based on the issues to address an issue, a claim, a complaint, or a crime. So first, can you kind of let us in on the mind of an officer? And then two, to follow up, have you grown frustrated with the anti-police tone? Or are you sympathetic to the outrage and current mistrust? And I guess a follow-up to that, Chief, I'm sorry, has it made your department's job more stressful? So can you kind of briefly share with us the mind of an officer? So think about what happened in Atlanta and George Floyd. Obviously, most people are, based on what they see, feel like, you know, that wasn't right. But there are some situations to where it's kind of a toss-up.
And with that, though, I mean, nobody wants to go to jail, right? Okay? And if, for example, we get a call of a DV, okay? Sometimes it's an act of disturbance, an act of domestic violence. People are screaming and yelling. So an officer goes from going in his car, say he's patrolling the streets, mm-hmm. to, hey, we have an active disturbance where they're screaming and yelling, and the dispatcher's saying we have an active disturbance, and say there's guns involved, right? So the officer goes from being calm to his blood pressure and everything going sky high. He's trying to get there because he's trying to separate them and try to get them safe. And so you go from down low to up. Now, we practice de-escalation. We just sent all the officers through it this year and last year. And de-escalation is you try to use communication to de-escalate the system. Obviously, the people involved in the disturbance, their blood pressure and their, you know, excited, and they're upset. The officer's blood pressure's up. He's on edge because he doesn't know what the situation is. So the officer's job is to defuse it, get everybody back down to neutral so we can communicate. But at times, you know, it's a dangerous job. So at times, if somebody would like to domestic violence charges, maybe that individual doesn't want to go to jail. And maybe they just don't want to get cuffed. Sometimes officers in certain situations may have to use force. We train our officers as force is used. We immediately sit them up. We check for injuries. And then we take them out to the hospital. We get them evaluated before we take them to the jail. But, I mean, nobody wants to go to jail. I mean, even if they're wrong, they don't want to go to jail. And we do the best we can to try to communicate that. And, you know, we don't know what's going on in their lives. You know, I mean, everybody has underlying issues in their lives, mm-hmm. in their personal lives. And here you go, we get the police called. So nobody likes us coming to their house or coming to the disturbance or coming to a bar disturbance. Nobody likes that. You know, search warrants, when we do search warrants for drugs, the narcotics officers are doing their jobs because somebody in the community has called that this house is selling drugs. Well, guess what? We have a narcotics department. Guess what that narcotics? They're supposed to make safer communities and stop drugs. Well, we do a search warrant in the house, and we have kids in the house. Well, what's their kid's first impression of that house? Oh, police are evil because they're busting in my house. We're not evil. We don't want to be evil. But obviously somebody in there selling drugs and poisoning the community and our citizens, so that's what we got to do to stop the issue going on with drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had that heroin epidemic, and it's just been one thing after another.
I know.
But, you know, was it Matthew 19:26 says, with God, all things are possible. And I really think the United for Change March that we started, I think we're on the right path. I hope we're on the right path, because I really think the police department is here for the community, and I think we want to be here. I'm also bringing in some training July 20th and 21st, and I put it out to Reverend Bailey. The first day of training on July 20th is open to any community leaders or reverends, and you can see what they're training during this racial intelligence training.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited. I really think the march, and I really think our community supports us. We've had very peaceful protests throughout the city. I can't speak for other areas, but I think we do a pretty good job with, you know, involving the community, and I hope it continues. I really do.
And that is because Middletown is different from Minnesota. From Atlanta, I mean, I think we talked in our prior meetings with the Ministerial Alliance as we was leading up to the NAACP event here about some of the challenges that face this community when it comes to law enforcement. It's totally different than maybe what Minnesota, having a track record of police brutality and abuse of power. But has, because you're human, you know, you're chief, but you're human. So when you're watching the news or listening or getting on social media, does it bother you because the anti-police tone has risen to an all-time level now? And does it cause you to become frustrated with it, or do you sympathize with the outrage based on?
It's a little bit of both, you know, Kevin. I mean, it's both. I mean, I can sympathize with them. But if we defund the police anymore, every police department's running short. If we defund them and we put it in, say, social services, right? We try social services. We try counseling sessions. We get mental health people. We take them to the hospital. They kick them back out after evaluation. So if we're going to defund the police, we need to have a plan for defunding those police. We just can't cut the police, because we have no other place to cut unless it's officers, personnel. I mean, we're bare bones as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have an alternative, if we want to have more social services out there, mental health professionals, they need to work past 5 o'clock. Because my 311 officers go out and they have someone 10 at night that we know has mental issues, and we know has a drug issue, because most of those go hand in hand. And here we are, what's an officer do? Our best place for him, safest place, is a jail. We take him off to the hospital. they evaluate them, they kick them loose, and then I'm getting a call out at the hospital because they can't keep them for the, you know, 72 hours or whatever they have. So if they defund it, we just need to come together as all community leaders and find out what we need to do. But defunding the police without a plan, it's just not, it's not a solution. I think it would be better to maybe increase, you know, that for training purposes, for more officers, for so the officers aren't running from call to call to call. And maybe if they're not as stressed, if they're not exhausted from working so much and going to court, and, you know, you got a midnight officer that's working midnights and he has a court subpoena at 9 and 2 o'clock, and he has a family, he has kids, that officer's coming in on 4 hours of sleep. Maybe if we had more manpower, more budget for training, maybe we can come up with a different type of solution. Maybe we can have more COP, some community officers, and have them building relationship with these individuals and coming up with solutions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just defunding them, I understand both sides. But it's defund the police, well, what are we going to do in return? You know, let's have a plan before we defund the police.
Scripture talks about write the vision and make it plain. So as I go to my final thought, Chief, you're Christ-centered, just like me. And, you know, just as you have to be a watchman in the city from your post, my role as a pastor, and for those pastors across the nation, they have to do the same in a spiritual sense. And we have to figure out how to work together. Jesus always wanted to challenge us on our so-called comfort zones. And I believe what's happened with COVID and then this racial injustice or this unrest, it is an opportunity for us to get out of our comfort zone, so to speak. And I don't believe that any Christ-centered individual should be comfortable with the status quo of what is happening in our nation. So that being said, do you believe that the church is unified or divided on the issues at hand when we're talking about Black Lives Matter? You have a segment of people who believe in that and said that needs to be the focus, but it's not saying that all lives don't matter, just saying that all lives can't matter unless Black Lives Matter. And then you have a group who are saying, why do we have to focus on Black Lives Matter? Let's just focus on all lives. And you have now Blue Lives Matter, you know, and some people feel like that's detouring from the moment. Do you, and then the church has to decide what to do with that. Do you believe that the church is unified or divided on the issues at hand? When it comes to those things,
I think we need, you know, God created everything. You know, He's our creator, He's our ultimate. And like I said earlier, the Constitution, the founders of the Constitution based a lot of that Constitution on the Bible. There's many, many verses in there that have taken it and used it to frame that Constitution of the United States. But I think right now, there I can't speak about Black Lives Matter. I don't know what the agenda is, you know. And I do feel that we have to have more of spiritual coming together. I think we have that group from junior high, or that group from, you know, elementary to junior high to the, you know, freshman year is critical years. And I really think we've lost the message. You know, we have to be kind to everybody. We have to love everybody. I mean, God loves us unconditional. He loves everybody. He loves you. He loves me. He loves your wife. He loves everybody. I think we've lost that message, and I think we need to bring it back. But I think, you know, in Middletown, I think we're starting. You know, we had the Reverence meeting, the Reliance meeting. I think they're starting to see our vision. I think, you know, I've spoke to the NAACP. I think there's some mismessages getting out there. I don't think everybody's on the same page, but it's early. I think we can get there. But no, I think we have to bring the church involved. And I don't know how to do it, but we definitely have to put, you know, my philosophy is you put God first. You know, you have to put God first. And then you have to put your family, and then, you know, I worry next about the community. You know, that's my order, because that's what I'm here for. And I don't think we can get there unless we put, you know, God first. But I think we have the groundwork to make positive, effective change in this community. And I think, you know, I think the dialogue, I think communication, I think I've got Holly Owens in community orientation or community oriented policing. She's really starting to solve neighborhood issues, going to increase neighborhood watch programs. I think we're starting to. But I don't know what the answer is to bring people back in the church. I know we've been doing a lot of more Zoom than actually physically going, just because,
right,
you know, the COVID stuff. But yeah, I was raised Catholic, you know, and as I grown older, I kind of switched to more of a Christian faith.
Yeah.
But I really think it's a foundation from an early age on, and I think we need to continue that.
You know, this conversation was not to roll out policy and things of that nature, but it was an opportunity to allow you to share your heart, because you're in a tough situation, and unfortunately, the heat is on. No pun intended with the BS, but it's on. And you're having to work extra hard to be able to demonstrate that the Middletown Police Department will be as fair and just as the scriptures talk about. When you talk about the foundations of the Constitution and the scriptures behind that, there has to be more courageous conversation. I think the church has an opportunity to do that. And my hope and prayer is that pastors, white pastors, black pastors, brown pastors, Asian pastors will be able to have courageous conversations. I think we're divided on this because of the fact that our nation's history is not a glorious one. And as we approach Independence Day, that it's real raw right now. And the church, not necessarily law enforcement, but the church has to be able to deal with this, because we need to model the change that we're hoping the world wants to see.
Yes.
And so we have to be able to acknowledge that black lives do matter in order for all lives to matter. We have to acknowledge the fact that, yes, there are some bad police officers and agencies, but not all of them are.
Right.
We have to acknowledge that, yes, there is some funding issues that may need to be looked at, but to just eradicate policing in general would just cripple communities.
Yes.
And think about Middletown, we have 6 officers that are able on a daily basis to serve a community of 49,000. That's difficult.
Yeah,
it doesn't
is.
Matter what color you are. So we have to face those things. We also, from the black community, got to understand, yes, we know that there are some other things we need to deal with, but we need to be able to figure out how to stay current and come unified in the sense of, hey, let's deal with this issue here. And let's acknowledge the fact that America is built upon what it's built upon, and be able to acknowledge it and be able to see, okay, how can we be better?
Yep.
But right now we're seeing a lot of deflection, and unfortunately law enforcement is smack dab in there. And so I, you know, as we wrap up, how can the faith community help you, help law enforcement improve community and police relations? What is the one thing? I know you're talking about, you know, we need to maybe get out, but what is one thing that we can do? And maybe this is something that can spark an idea for a viewer or someone who's watching this.
Having the open communication that we've had with, you know, Reverend Bailey, and just having I text Reverend Bailey on a daily basis almost. He probably is getting annoyed of me, you know? But I think it's just having that open communication, and if there's an issue, bring it to my attention, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, there's issues out there that happen all over the city. You know, there's shots fired, calls, somebody shot, you know. And what we need is cooperation from the whole community. And I think that's where the faith group can get. If we have a shooting and there's someone that's injured, instead of saying, oh, I'm not talking to police, that's when we need the church community, the faith community to come and say, hey, look, if you've seen something, you know something, tell them. Because we're here to protect everybody, you know? And that's the biggest roadblock we come into. If something happens, is, man, don't talk to the police, you know? Don't talk to the police. And then it takes us so much longer to figure it out. But that would probably be the number one thing that we could use help with. If there's a serious issue out there and there's a serious event out there, instead of saying, no, I'm not talking to you, is if we could bring in the faith community to help us build that gap. And on serious issues such as violence, I mean, we had that robbery over there off of Commerce where the, you know, the clerk was tied up in the back and, you know, they had AR-15. I mean, if we could get, you know, that, build that gap and get that information right from the scene, we could get the individuals in custody a lot sooner. And that's probably the number one gap we need to think is we're not the enemies. You know, we're here to protect and serve this community the best we can, but it takes a community for change. And we just can't do it by ourselves. The faith community can't do it by ourselves. So we need to all come together and build that. And I think, you know, I think if we work on it, which I think we're doing, who knows where Middletown can go. I mean, we could be model for everybody else.
Well, Chief, your time is valuable. I appreciate you just stopping by and allowing me to spend some moments with you here on RevCast Podcast. And your words is out there. And so hopefully we all have to be accountable for what we say. And hopefully now the information is out there. People can be accountable and be able to take it into their own personal situations. And hopefully there were some community leaders, law enforcement leaders in other areas that could see this and see this again as a stepping stone. It's not perfect. We still have ways to go.
Yes.
But we have to start somewhere. And to me, communication like this is important. So I salute you and praying for you. And don't work too hard. All right. You know, and so God bless you.
Thank you. All right. You too.